My name's Captain Doug Beattie. I've been in the Army for just over 33 years now, and I have served that whole time with the Royal Irish Regiment throughout the world. I deployed to Afghanistan in 2006, and I had this iPod with me when I went, and I used to show it to the Afghans, and the Afghans were totally amazed with this thing, and they always tried to buy it off me for a couple of goats, but I never parted with it, and I've retained the songs on it as well. But it takes me back to a moment in time. It takes me back to Garmseer in southern Helmand, to a small ruined agricultural college where we lived, to a small half-dug grave which I slept in because it's the only cover that I had. It takes me through a journey which was my Afghan experience, where we really were engaged in fighting from compounds surrounded on the rooftops, just really scrapping it while the enemy closed in on us. Bob Marley's One Love reminds me very much of my interaction with the Afghans whilst I was down there. On many occasions, they would come up and sort of say, put on your music, BT, and you know, I would put on One Love for them each time, and then they would laugh and try to sing along to it. And it was nice to see, but you know, when you're sort of playing your music and they're sort of saying, no, I don't like that song, put this song back on, and you put One Love back on, and then the next song comes and they say, no, I don't like that, put that one back on, and you have to put One Love back on again. So you end up listening to One Love about 10 times until they've finished their dancing or they get a little bit bored of it.
Six Alpha, be aware, those mortars are danger close. They're on, but we are receiving some of that frag, over.
Patrick Hennessy was in the Army for 5 years, serving in Iraq in 2006 and Afghanistan in 2007.
Six Alpha, that was spot on. We're now observing for any enemy movement, over.
First few times, we were in a sort of old-fashioned shooting match. I remember thinking, gosh, this is just like when you're trying to get through a club and get a bottle of water from the bar and you can't hear or see a thing. Although with slightly more extreme consequences, I guess. Listening back to Armin van Helden, it certainly has that kind of urgency to it, which very powerfully I associate with the actual experience of a contact itself. There's a long history of people trying to come up with imaginative ways to replicate the confusion and the urgency and the adrenaline without obviously just shooting at your own people. But it immediately struck me that if you were to take a platoon of 30 soldiers down into a proper supercar with a good big sound system, and then if you set them tasks, right, you know, you've got 35 seconds to get across this heaving dance floor that you can't see properly because there's a strobe. How do you communicate and how do you cut a rational path through something which is as consciously detaching itself from rationality? So looking back at the sort of stuff we used to listen to, you know, there's a real bias towards dance music effectively, which would seem to be counterintuitive, but I don't think it is.
See, I think that works, because I was just wondering...
My name's Sean Langan. I'm a documentary filmmaker.
Sean spoke to the BBC World Service from the cutting room of his latest documentary.
Is that right up top?
Yeah.
But I actually like...
I set out to be a documentary filmmaker and ended up covering the war on terror. I specialised in Afghanistan, and as a result, once 9/11 happened, I was kind of the go-to guy for Islamic extremist insurgents, whatever they're called. And so I spent the next 10, 12 years covering Afghanistan and Iraq. Even though I didn't listen to music too much when I was on the ground with the British soldiers being shot at, bullets flying and the sound of RPGs and mortars going off around me, that's the only soundtrack I needed, and I actually wanted to hear that, thinking it might help me survive. Before going down, I would put headphones on in my hotel room, and I would often listen to Josh Wink, Eyes Shut, and imagine all hell breaking loose. And that track seemed to go rather well with all hell breaking loose. Because at night time, when you're under attack, you've got helicopters, you've got NVG goggles, you've got light beams, red beams, explosions, and it's pretty terrifying. And it really helped bizarrely focus the mind. And it's rather sort of full-on, discordant, techno beat kind of got you in the right mode, i.e. tensing your muscles and hoping you're not going to get shot.
We were just driving along the ridge and came under fire and had to get out of the car. The Taliban were in these trenches about half an hour ago. And now we're in them. They're firing at us.
In 2006, Sean made two films in Afghanistan, one following the Taliban, the other on the front line with British troops.
When you're with the British soldiers, in fact, the way to really get on with them and bond with them is to put yourself as far forward as you can in the firing line. And once you've done that, it really changes. So when I first went with this British team in Helmand, it was in this Battle of Garmsa, this strategically important town, they call it, but to me it looked like a dust bowl. 17 British soldiers accompanying 100 ANA, Afghan National Army and Afghan National Police, were very wary of me. And over the process of this week-long battle, by mucking in with them and being prepared to put myself in the firing line, we bonded.
One of those 17 British soldiers captured on Sean's film Fighting the Taliban was Captain Doug Beattie, who won the Military Cross for his courage and leadership during that operation.
At the edge of the tree line, I want you to engage with the 50 cal.
It was on the fifth anniversary of the Twin Towers atrocity, and we were literally fighting from the moment we crossed the open plain and they started shelling us with rockets. Us crossing the canal and the fighting starting in earnest. Our contact lasted non-stop for 36 hours. There's no structure to what's going on. It really is frenetic. But there's a clarity to it that if you get something wrong here, then you're going to die or one of your men is going to die. And as you're sort of picking your target with your machine gun, you squeeze the trigger and you watch your target fall. And then you say, right, leaving that for a moment, and you flick your map open and you start looking for the grid references that you're going to give the guy who's at the top. But as you're doing that, you can hear the bullets going over the top of your head from the enemy. And there's no fear because you are so busy. But then there's a fear when the JTAC says stores. And that word means the aircraft that I just gave the coordinates for have just dropped the bomb and it's on its way down. And you have that horrible, sickly feeling that if I've got this wrong, this is going to land on me. And you literally count it down. And the fear is endless until the detonation. Then your heart leaps again and you're back up and you're firing again. And most of the time, you really just want to hide. But as a commander, you can't hide. And it's not just because you're a commander, but it's because you are so incredibly busy that you don't even notice.